This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Ben, sending you nothing but good vibrations.
This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Glenn Holt.
And Brian Levinka.
And coming up on the show this evening, of course, we have News Wrap from This Way Out. We have Professor Brian Rydell, a Queer Voices program as part of HPLGLBT. Boy, that's a mouthful.
It's the library, the downtown library.
Okay. Houston Public Library.
All right. We have Fred Walters from the Houston Buyers Club. And, of course, we have our regular features from This Way Out, and we have some news and announcements and that sort of thing. Coming up first, we're going to have David Elliott as soon as he calls in. And he's going to talk about what's going on, of course, in politics with his Inside the Beltway and Beyond report. And Deborah is going to be taking a couple of weeks off. She's going to get some much-needed and much-deserved rest. And the rest of us are going to be wading through Edward as Edward approaches.
Yeah. What's the latest on its arrival?
Well, we're thinking probably around noonish tomorrow.
Gay time.
Yeah, it's of course, Edward, you know, being a proper gay boy, he's going to arrive gay standard time. So
it's going to be, he was going to be there at 9 in the morning, but it's going to be gay time at
right.
noon.
Okay, actually,
I got that.
We've already had some Edward because that storm that hit Montgomery County yesterday that I happened to be driving through at the time, that was actually attached to Edward. It was part of the rotation system of that system. And as I was coming into the radio station this evening, there was a nice thunderhead out there that looks like it's probably the very leading edge of the very first feeder bands.
Well, we talk about wrong place, wrong time.
What? Oh, driving through that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it was like the same place. Go ahead, yeah.
But he's a storm hunter.
Yeah, something
storm
like
chaser,
that.
I mean.
Stormy chase.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Hey, we have David Elliott on the line, and David in Washington, D.C., how are you doing?
Well, good evening. We don't have any Edward coming here. In fact, we're going to have 98 degrees here tomorrow, very high humidity, so it's going to feel a lot like Houston.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear. This is Jennifer. It's good to hear that. You will appreciate us more.
Right. Well, we all get to suffer together.
Right. Well, there's a lot going on, David. I don't even know where to start.
Well, let's start here, Jack and Jennifer, if I may.
Please.
We're 92 days out. We're 92 days away from the day we go to the polls to choose a new president and a new Congress. And there are two things I want to discuss with you tonight. First, I want to discuss timing, because we're about to enter a most interesting news cycle. Second, I want to discuss the current state of the political landscape. So, let's talk about timing. This Friday, the Beijing Olympics begin. This is going to be a huge story. Even though there may be some developments in the presidential race during the Olympic Games, generally, all the oxygen is going to be sucked up. These games are going to be a huge thing for China, and the TV ratings here in the States are going to be most impressive. And, you know, I talk about timing. Of course, you all have a tropical storm bearing down on you. I can't forget about that. But, you know, add to all of this the fact that many Americans are going to be going on vacation and won't be paying any attention at all to the elections for the next few weeks. And you can understand that really for the next 18 days or so, people are going to be completely tuning out on politics. So, in other words, 3 weeks from now, 3 weeks from tonight, when the Democrats gather for their national convention in Denver,
right,
the political landscape will be just about exactly the same as it is today. So keep in mind, the Olympic Games end at about the same time. It's either the same day or the day before that the Democratic Convention begins. So take today's political scenario, fast forward it 3 weeks to the future, and that's where we are, 3 weeks closer to the presidential election. Now, let's talk, if we may, about the current political landscape.
What does it look like?
Well, right now, the race for president is close. But it is very important to note two things. First, if the election were held today, Obama would be elected president, period, dot, dash. He would carry all of the states that John Kerry won in 2004, and he would carry between 6 to 12 of the states that Bush won in 2004. In terms of the Electoral College, it would not be close. In terms of the popular vote, excluding the third-party candidates like Bob Barr, Ralph Nader, Cynthia McKinney, it would probably be around 52% to 48%. Nevertheless, some political pundits and some Democratic Party activists are frustrated that Obama has only a narrow lead in the national polls. Indeed, his average lead in the national polls is about 2.5 points once you aggregate all of them together. Why? Why in this year, when everything seems to favor the Democrats, is his lead so small? That's what people are asking. And I'm going to give you a couple of plausible explanations. First, this is the first election since 1952 that no sitting vice president or president is seeking the White House. That's 56 years ago, people. 56 years ago. This election is history in the making in more ways than one. But what it means is that voters don't particularly know either of the candidates well. And here you got a guy named Barack Obama, a guy with a name that is a little bit different, an ethnicity that is a little bit different from your typical presidential candidate. He grew up in Hawaii and Indonesia. And I want to take y'all back to the 1980 election. That might seem to be a strange one to go back to, but bear with me. 3 weeks before the November 1980 election, incumbent President Jimmy Carter and Republican challenger Ronald Reagan were in an absolute dead heat. They were tied in the polls. Yet Reagan went on to crush Carter by 10 percentage points in the popular vote. The public waited until the last minute. They were looking at Ronald Reagan, who they didn't know very well. There had been some suggestions made that perhaps he was a little bit crazy or senile. And finally, they became comfortable with him, for better or for far worse. And they voted for him. Now, there's one more point that I want to make before I bring you some breaking news out of Washington, D.C., and that point is this. Barack Obama is simply destroying John McCain throughout the United States when it comes to grassroots organizing on the ground. Some examples. In Montana, Obama has 6 local offices opened, 0 for McCain. Obama just opened an office in Oklahoma. There's no office in Oklahoma for McCain, and the McCain campaign has no plans to open one. Obama has opened offices all over Ohio, a key state. McCain has just one. In Pennsylvania, Obama has opened 10 times as many county offices as John McCain. And the story is nearly the same in the key state of Virginia and in other key states like Florida. Finally, some breaking news to bring you tonight. The Bush White House has announced that it has reached an agreement with the McCain campaign that Vice President Dick Cheney will not be attending the Republican convention in Minneapolis, which opens up 1 week after the Democrats on Labor Day, no less. Apparently, McCain has decided that he wants to turn a new page with his candidacy, and having Dick Cheney show up would not be helpful.
I wonder if Larry Craig is going to be there.
Well, I don't know. I kind of doubt it. Although, you know, it's a nice convention center they have in, you know, in St. Paul, Minneapolis. You know, it's a you know, well accommodated, and so, you know, who knows?
Well, is President Bush going to go?
President Bush, reports have it, will be speaking on the opening night, which is the night of Labor Day, when a lot of Americans will be driving home from their summer vacations.
Or watching the Jerry Lewis Telethon.
Right. Now, you know, what's also kind of interesting, you all know that Virginia has emerged as a very key state.
Yes.
Obama has a narrow lead there. If Obama were to carry the state of Virginia, which no Democrat has done since 1964, it would be difficult, although not impossible, for McCain to win the White House. Well, get this. When McCain will be giving his acceptance speech the first Thursday of September, we will be watching the opening game of the NFL regular season, pitting the Washington Redskins against the New York Giants. And, of course, the Washington Redskins have a huge viewership out in Virginia. So it really seems like, timing-wise, it almost seems like God or Goddess is a Democrat this year. I mean, Hillary Clinton will be giving a very important speech to the Democratic Convention on the 88th anniversary of the ratification of the amendment granting women the right to vote. Obama will be giving his acceptance speech on a key anniversary, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the 44th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. It just seems like everything is turning up roses for the Democrats. And, you know, I want to go back to something I said earlier. Some folks have been frustrated the last week or two because the McCain campaign has learned how to effectively make use of YouTube, and they've put out some very sarcastic and very mocking ads, you know, toward Obama. I'm not sure that this is going to hurt Obama in the long run.
Well, but, you know, we do need to be concerned, because elections can be turned around. And, you know, yes, it seems very unlikely that a McCain can win, but, you know, we know they can play dirty tricks.
It's true. You know, we have to see how this thing rolls out. I think that in August and in September, a very key issue is going to emerge. I think that you're going to see Obama calling for American taxpayers to receive $1,000 gas rebate checks. And I think that you're going to see Obama suggesting that they should be paid for by imposing a windfall profits tax on oil companies. Now, you might recall that recently, what most of us received, if we were filing if that's the right word, most of us received $600 tax rebate checks, right?
I didn't get mine.
Yeah, you didn't get yours?
Nope, didn't get mine. I could have used it for rent last month.
Well, you know, the thing is, those checks weren't paid for. Those checks were paid for by adding to the deficit in the future.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Obama is suggesting PAYGO, you know, tax the oil companies so that we can have the revenue to do this, so that people who have been hurting by, you know, the price at the pump, they've been feeling the pain at the pump, they will, you know, can have get back something, and it's paid for by corporations that have, you know, been making, you know, record-setting profits. McCain will come out against this. So that's going to be something that I think you're going to see is going to emerge in August and September as a key point of friction between the two campaigns. And it's going to symbolize the difference between the two campaigns in their approach toward big oil. And I think in this era of an economic cash crunch that we're facing, in this oil, in this era of rising energy prices, and trouble folks are having paying for health care and college tuition and what have you, I think this is going to be a big difference, and I think it's going to be a defining moment.
I have a question concerning the House and the Senate. What do you think? How is that those races looking nationwide?
It's looking really good. It's not a question of whether the Democrats are going to pick up seats in both chambers, Jennifer. And that was Jennifer asking me,
yes,
that,
it
right?
Yes,
I'm sorry. I'm not sitting there in your studio. Sometimes I get your names and faces confused.
That's okay.
I believe that we're going to be looking at somewhere between a 15 and 40 seat pickup in the U.S. House, which will be one of the larger pickups for the Democrats in modern U.S. history. Every single day, new races are coming into play that we weren't expecting to come into play. It's been amazing. On the Senate side, here's what to look out for. Okay, right now, we have a 51 to 49 seat advantage, if you include Joseph Lieberman, who kind of is a Democrat, kind of is a Republican, it depends on the issue, and if you include Bernie Sanders, the socialist from Vermont, who always votes with the Democrats. We are definitely going to get at least six seats, which would take us to 57 to 43, right? The question is, can we get to 60 or even to 61? Because you have to keep in mind that in the U.S. Senate, you have to have 60 votes or 61 if Lieberman votes against us to get anything done, to be able to shut off the debate from the other side. In the House, you can win any issue with a bare majority of one. But because of the way the rules are written and the way that the framers wrote the rules, you have to have three-fifths of a majority, kind of a supermajority in the U.S. Senate. So that's the question. Can we get to 60 or 61 in November? And it is going to be extremely, extremely, extremely close. Remember that 2 years ago, I said we would go to bed Tuesday night not knowing who would control the majority of the U.S. Senate the next morning. And I was right about that. We ended up getting Montana and Virginia, right. And we got the Senate. We will go to bed this election night, November 4th, not knowing whether we're at 60 or 61 that we need. So we're going to have a very significant pickup. How overwhelming is it going to be? It needs to be overwhelming so that the next president, assuming, reading the tea leaves that it's going to be Obama, will have super majorities at his disposal to act quickly, dramatically, with resolution and determination on the most fundamental issues facing Americans today: the price of health care, developing energy independence, making education more accessible to all.
Absolutely. Well, David, thank you for joining us again. Tell us what you do for your day job.
Well, Jack, thanks for having me. For my day job, I am the communications director for a group called U.S. Action. You can find us at usaction.org and our sister organization, truemajority.org, which is kind of like a little moveon.org, if you will. We do online and grassroots activism on the key issues facing Americans, domestic issues, and also, by the way, I haven't talked about this tonight, but we're also trying to get the U.S. out of Iraq. And
really?
We are trying to defeat the anti-gay ballot initiatives in Florida and California.
Good for you.
Well, great. Well, thank you again for joining us, and it's always good to learn with the update stuff. I mean, you know, we hear it covered on a lot of different media outlets, but you seem to be able to filter it out very well.
Well, thank you all for having me, and please, everybody, hunker down and, you know, be safe with that storm coming, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you, David.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Eight-track heart, got a broke rear wide. He upped that stuff till he gone blind. He flies like a kite, high from the ground. The firebird flies, fame coming down. He's a bump in the road,
bump in the road.
A bee on the vine,
bee on the vine.
Birds in flight, a long yellow line. In the trail of heart of a tin can sky, already gone with the wink of an eye. Life's a shot.
Soundtrack for an Aneurysm High School from 2007. The title, the title of that track, Gasoline.
I'm Chris Wilson,
and I'm Pam Marshall
with NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 2nd, 2008. Violent attacks against four gay men and the homophobic vandalism of three Lutheran churches marred the celebration of Europride in Stockholm this week. The 10-day festival in the Swedish capital, held in a different city each year and capped by the traditional Pride Parade, has attracted tens of thousands of LGBT visitors from across Europe. But two gay men in their late 20s were robbed and stabbed earlier in the week. According to police officials, the couple had just shared a kiss outside a convenience store when two men yelling homophobic slurs assaulted them, took their cell phones, stabbed one in the stomach, and then stabbed the other as he tried to protect his partner. They're each reportedly in serious condition, and the assailants have thus far eluded capture. Two other men were beaten in the city as their attackers shouted anti-gay slurs and specifically denounced Europride. Neither of the victims was seriously injured. Three young men, aged 17 to 20, were arrested a short time later and charged with assault as a hate crime. Three Lutheran churches in Stockholm were also vandalized this week. Authorities said the churches had flyers pasted over the facades of the buildings denouncing Europride and containing biblical condemnation of homosexuality. Anti-queer literature from a group calling themselves Orthodox Christians was scattered around the grounds at each location. The Swedish Lutheran Church, the largest denomination in the country, is lesbi-gay welcoming and has a booth at Europride.
The man who shot and killed two people and wounded seven others at a church in the U.S. state of Tennessee this week reportedly hated liberals and gay people. 58-year-old Jim D. Adkison allegedly targeted the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church because of its liberal reputation. He burst into Sunday services as parish children were performing for the congregation, opening fire with a 12-gauge shotgun he'd hidden in a guitar case. Knoxville Police Chief Sterling P. Owen IV told reporters that a four-page letter found in Atkinson's car indicated that the attack was motivated by his frustration of not being able to find a job, for which he blamed gays and what he called the liberal movement. The Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church is like most others in the denomination, with a long record of activism in social justice movements. The church makes its space available for weekly meetings of a local chapter of parents, families, and friends of lesbians and gays, and the predominantly LGBT Metropolitan Community Church of Knoxville held services there during the first 8 years of its existence. Adkisson has been charged with first-degree murder and is being held on $1 million bail.
Religious police in Saudi Arabia, acting on a tip received by the State Commission for the Propagation of Virtue and the Prevention of Vice, raided another so-called gay party this week. Local television reported two young men wearing women's makeup and dancing together were among 55 people arrested in the eastern coastal province of Qatif. Drugs and alcohol were reportedly also found, and many of those arrested were apparently young Filipino and Pakistani men living in the country on work permits. More than 20 men were arrested during a similar raid, also in Qatif, in June. Homosexuality is severely punished in Saudi Arabia under Sharia or Islamic law. Convictions can even lead to public beheadings. A court in April 2006 sentenced two Saudis, one Yemeni and a Jordanian, to 2,000 lashes and 2 years in prison after a similar raid on an allegedly gay party.
Bahrain's parliament passed a measure in April ordering the Gulf state's interior ministry to stop granting residence permits to foreign homosexuals, and an MP this week demanded that the government begin implementing that law. The measure called for gay men to be rooted out of hair salons, massage parlors, and that teachers watch for homosexual tendencies in children and punish them accordingly. Up to 2,000 allegedly gay Filipino workers may have been deported in 2002 by the predominantly Muslim nation.
An Ugandan AIDS activist was abducted and tortured by police this week, according to reports by Human Rights Watch, Sexual Minorities Uganda, and the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, or IGLHRC. Usam Mukwaya and two other activists were charged with trespassing in June after staging a protest during a global HIV-AIDS conference in Kampala to demand that men who have sex with men be included in the deliberations. According to an IGLHRC press release, after he was abducted, Mukwaya was cut around the hands and tortured with a machine that applies extreme pressure to the body, preventing breathing and causing severe pain, and that he was aggressively questioned about the Ugandan LGBT movement. Mukwaya was reportedly dumped by the side of the road after the interrogation, and members of Sexual Minorities Uganda found him weak, filthy, without shoes and some of his clothing. Human Rights Watch warned that the abduction and torture of an Ugandan HIV-AIDS activist faces trial for holding a peaceful protest reveals the danger to those who challenge the government's policies. Police officials insist that Mukwaya was not harmed during detention and was simply seeking publicity. Consenting adult same-gender sex is outlawed in Uganda, and President Yoweri Museveni has often railed against homosexuality as a negative foreign culture.
U.S. President George W. Bush signed legislation this week that repealed a law banning HIV-positive travelers or immigrants from entering the country. The measure passed both houses of Congress by significant margins as part of a global HIV-AIDS funding bill. The ban was created by a 1987 regulation that added HIV to the list of communicable diseases that bar visitors and immigrants. But the Health and Human Services Department must implement the new regulation by issuing a notice in the Federal Register where rule changes are published. A mandatory comment period of up to 90 days follows, and only then can the rule be finalized. Writing in the New York-based Gay Community News this week, Duncan Osborne reported that a memo issued to all federal agencies on May 9th by White House Chief of Staff Joshua Bolton specified that any new regulations for the remainder of the Bush administration had to be proposed by June 1st and finalized by November 1st. Bolton wrote that the only exceptions were for extraordinary circumstances. It appears, then, that repeal of the HIV travel and immigration ban may not take effect until there's a new president in the White House.
Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick signed legislation legislation on July 31st, repealing a 1913 law that barred couples from marrying there if the union would not be valid in their home states. Following a previous Senate vote, the House overwhelmingly voted for repeal earlier in the week. California, which in June became the only other U.S. state with marriage equality, has no residency requirement. Same-gender weddings have been legal in Massachusetts since 2004, and repeal of the 1913 law, originally enacted to bar interracial marriage, now allows couples from other states to marry there. Opponents of repeal warned that the move would make Massachusetts the Las Vegas of gay marriage and would infringe on other states' rights to define marriage. Supporters said that the old law had racist origins and argued that repeal would bring an economic boom to Massachusetts. A recent study, in fact, predicted that same-gender couples marrying there, especially from nearby states, would add $111 million to the Massachusetts economy in the next 3 years. Several out-of-state lesbi-gay couples have already requested marriage license applications in Provincetown, according to Assistant Town Clerk Susie Fultz, and more are expected. New York doesn't allow its same-gender couples to marry. But, citing several court rulings, Governor David Paterson has ordered the state to recognize such marriages legally performed elsewhere.
Marriage equality in California is far from secure, of course, with a looming November ballot initiative, Proposition 8, that would overturn the state Supreme Court ruling and constitutionally ban same-gender marriage. That hasn't stopped thousands of couples from getting marriage licenses in California since the court ruling took effect in mid-June. The original wording of the ballot initiative read, amends the California Constitution to provide that only marriage between a man and a woman is valid or recognized in California. But new language, ordered by State Attorney General Jerry Brown this week, will now say that the initiative changes California Constitution to eliminate right of same-sex couples to marry. It also notes that banning those marriages could prevent California from gaining tens of millions of dollars in potential sales tax revenue. Supporters of Proposition 8 say they're considering a lawsuit demanding that the language appear as it did on petitions that qualified the initiative for the ballot. Jennifer Kearns, spokeswoman for the so-called Protect Marriage Coalition, said that the new language could prejudice voters against the initiative. But Steve Smith, campaign manager for No on Proposition 8, applauded the language change. What Proposition 8 would do is eliminate the right of same-sex couples to marry, he said, which is exactly what the Attorney General put in the title of the measure.
And finally, Florida and Arizona are also facing November ballot initiatives to constitutionally ban same-gender marriage. But Barbara McCullough-Jones of Equality Arizona is concerned that all the attention and money are going to the California battle. We need a win in California. We need a win in Florida. We need a win in Arizona, she wrote in an article published this week. That very trifecta has the potential to change the face of American politics.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 2nd, 2008. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Pam Marshall.
Time, sometime tomorrow, when the battles that we fight today are nothing but a blur, and we gather to recall, to make sense of it all. Will history say just who and what we were? Despair, there's nothing I can do. Who was weak, who was strong, who was justified or just wrong? When the cure is found and celebrations fade, will history finally say, than kind. Who gave the gift of love and who turned away in fear? Who were the soldiers bravely marching into the fray? History remembers someday. Question, ask for how we stood up for our lives. Will anyone be blamed? Will a president be shamed for attempted passive genocide? Will history at last decide who was kind and who was less than kind? And who turned away in fear? Who were the soldiers bravely marching into the fray? History remembers someday. Why not today? Why wait for another to help us on our way? The silence by raising voices, making choices. Let compassion smother doubt. History will sort out who was kind, who was less than kind, who gave the gift of love and who turned away.
From the 1997 CD of the same title, History Remembers, that was John Whiteley. This is Queer Voices.
This week we have a very exciting
program. Who are you?
I am Brian Levinka.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Renee.
I was introducing the topic, and then I was going to tell them who we are.
Oh, okay.
Why don't you ride along with me?
I stepped right in there on that. I apologize.
No,
go right
that's
ahead.
Okay, no. It's important that we introduce. This is Brian Levinka.
Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Riedel.
Yes. Professor Riedel.
And what I was going to say is there's a very exciting program coming to our own Houston Public Library, the new central branch of the library, involving GLBT studies and history.
Mm-hmm.
And tonight we are very honored to have Professor Brian Riedel.
Yes.
From the prestigious Rice University.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you,
Brian. Now, the archives, mm-hmm. This is what you're talking about. What's in the archives?
Well, what isn't in the archives? That's really the question.
Okay. Isn't it just like old twits and stuff?
No. We've got everything from drag queen dresses to T-shirts that were protests to newspapers, organizational papers. The thing is, they're scattered all over Houston in all sorts of different places. And only a few people kind of know where all that stuff is. And so this event...
So you have to have a secret handshake to find them?
Oh, no. It's not that cool. It's a different kind of cool, right? This kind of cool is people have been really putting themselves out there on a personal basis for years to stow this stuff away. Say, like, I don't know, you, Jennifer, have been involved with the caucus. Mm-hmm. You know that there's huge amounts of paperwork that the caucus has built up.
Yeah.
What happens to that if the organization moves?
It's in a box somewhere, and if it gets moved or it gets lost, if someone's not keeping up with it, that's exactly what happens.
And who's going to keep up with it if an organization, say, for example, goes under or changes? That's what a lot of these archives have done.
Because there's been, over the years, I mean, the Cox has been around for over 30 years, but there are a lot that have come and gone over the years.
Exactly that. Now, say, for example, a parish of the day, Bayou City Boys Club, decides, Brian, to not do anything more the next year. What would you all do with your papers?
They'd probably be in somebody's garage, and then it would get all dusty. And
Yeah.
And down here, they'd mildew.
And they would start crawling away.
Yeah.
So you're saying that this is a collection of multiple archives in one location that people can go and visit and peruse and enjoy? Mm.
Well, there's going to be bits and pieces from different archives that the people who've been holding them all have pulled together for the purpose of the event. I mean, it's kind of impossible to pull everything together in one place.
Well, you know, during Pride, they usually have the tents that have kind of the history from the Gulf Coast Archive and Museum. I know that they pulled their stuff together.
That is one of them.
In addition to that, those holdings? Or
Yeah. Actually, Gulf Coast Archive and Museum will be there. Judy Reeves is going to give a little presentation on what they're doing.
Hi, Judy.
Hey, Judy. And also, the Charles Botts collection will be represented by Larry Criscione. He's going to come and talk about some of the stuff that they're doing.
What is the Charles Botts collection?
The Charles Botts collection is actually a really cool set of stuff. It's currently in the Metropolitan Community Church. Right? Way up there in the Heights.
Right.
And through the grace of the church, they've got this great space that used to be like a locker room or something. So if you walk in there, it's like walking into these shower stalls that are now, instead of filled with people, filled with things that people have done. So you've got these huge crates of papers and magazines and stuff.
Kind of ironic that the history of the gay, you know, gays would be in the former locker room.
Former locker room.
Yeah. Irony, appropriateness, we don't know.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Some divine irony there.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
So this is is this the monthly series? This is a one-time showing? What is this, part of a permanent ongoing collection? Or?
Actually, this kind of get-together is part of a series that the Houston Public Library has really taken some initiative to put together. People like Jennifer Schwartz and Joe Collier have been really instrumental in this. And what they've done is they put together a monthly series of different things. Like last month, it was an author. This next month is going to be Mark Doty, who's a really well-known poet who's partially resident here in Houston sometimes. Most of the time, he's up on the East Coast. But he's going to come talk about his new poetry next month. This month, they decided to have it be about gay history. And so that's why this particular event was called.
Why are they doing this?
Where's this coming from?
What's their motivation?
How are we so lucky to have this wonderful library program in our midst?
Well, you know, how are we not so lucky to have not had it before? Some other cities that have had long-standing archives, like New York or San Francisco with the One Archives.
Well, sure.
Those are like the gold standard, what we'd like to achieve here.
But why now?
Why now? Think about it like this. There's a whole bunch of people who've been kind of itching to get things started. The different archives have been really, really pulling themselves together here for a long time. But what kind of group effort have they been able to pull together in addition to the history tent? There's so much stuff out there that people just don't have access to. So this is one way of bringing some awareness to it that the library is interested in doing.
Yeah, that. Who at the library or what organization within the library is really promoting this?
What queen is out there doing his job? Let me tell you. Somebody's working.
Well, we don't want to give their names then.
Okay. Well, kudos have to go to the coordinator of programs at the Central Library, Jennifer Schwartz. She's really the spearhead of this particular series.
Okay.
Although this particular event, kudos have to go to Joe Collier, who's in the Texas room.
I see.
So tell us more about what we'll see, and two, when we're going to see this.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to be this Thursday. It's going to be from 7 to 9, you know, and there's
just
also...
Just one day.
Okay. This is a one-day gig. So you come, you get to see different people from the archives who can actually talk about what's there. There's going to be professional archivists who will talk to the general public about how they could preserve their own stuff. Because you don't have to have, like, the huge building to actually put this stuff together. You might have your own personal collection of twits, I think Brian brought up earlier. You might even have what was it, the Texas Triangle? Does anybody remember the Texas Triangle? A great vaunted institution.
Are kind of, those are kind of like moments in time, you know, because it kind of captures the events of that week, you know?
Yeah.
So if you have those going back, that's kind of like a snapshot of, you know,
of what's going on in our
at that time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you may have like got these things like stowed away in some, like you said, dusty corner that might mildew of your garage. There's going to be professional archivists there who can teach you how to take care of your own collection so that if, say, as would happen with Allison, now that we've got another tropical storm coming along, flood damage, you know, this really is the bane of archives in a bayou city, right? So how do you protect your stuff from that? Unfortunately, we're going to get this tropical storm before Thursday, so...
Hopefully they've protected everything.
Hopefully so, yeah.
Now, so, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we're talking about archives. Mm-hmm. How far do they go back, or is this more contemporary stuff, or does it go back to the beginning, and when is that?
Well, you know, I think that's a great point because, you know, gay history is 30 years old. I mean, it kind of starts ground, the day zero is kind of the Stonewall in 1969, you know, it kind of before that.
As a discipline, right, as a study discipline, it's 30 years old. It goes back much further than that. I mean, because we get to talk about people like Oscar Wilde, right?
Yeah.
You know, the famous Wilde and Stein show named after that, right? So, I mean, the archives that we have now do actually, for Houston, stretch back way beyond Town Hall 1, Town Hall 2, all those meetings that were really formational for our community.
Yeah.
And to the present day.
So what kind of archives will we see?
Okay.
Give us a taste.
I don't want to, like, presume to speak for everything that people are going to bring, but I can tell you some of the stuff that maybe Judy Reeves might bring from the Gulf Coast Archives and Museum. They happen to have things like the Louis Don't Shoot t-shirt, which some people may remember our famous mayor's little quip got protested.
Yes.
Yeah, yes, Mr. Louis Welch.
Louis Welch.
Who recently passed away, rest his soul.
But he had a few terrible comments.
Yeah. I think it was an on-air comment like, they should be shot.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, there are a lot of Republicans that still feel that way.
That's true. So maybe they can come and get some education at Thursday's event.
If you don't believe that, just read their state platform.
Right. There you go. So thinking about some of the other things that people might bring, I know that the Gulf Coast Archives and Museum has a great drag collection. They've got fabulous dresses that people have worn at different points in time. There's also organizational papers that are out there from the Botts collection. Actually, Charles Botts was a huge collector of books. That's how he landed into this whole collecting business. So he's got a lot of first editions. There's like signed Ginsbergs. Allen Ginsberg. Yeah. Really cool stuff. So I don't know what all they're going to bring. I haven't got that committed list in front of me. But you can look forward to some cool stuff.
The main thing is it's going to be exciting to
see. Yeah.
Going through the history tent and kind of looking at all the old like, publications, I love looking at like the old ads and just all the old...
Oh, yeah.
Like vintage photographs and all the big, burly, hairy men. And, you know, how, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, it was just... So exciting.
You and your hairy men. If you could only see this picture.
You know, I like hairy men, so I'm putting it up there. So.
You're not the only one.
I know.
Yep. Well, we girls like our girls.
What about
anything as far as the lesbians or transgenders in the archives?
It's very interesting that you mentioned that because Arden Evers Meyer is one of the most outstanding members of our community, and she's been doing a lot of work for the Herstory Archives. She's been going around interviewing people about life experiences, and she's going to come and talk about that a little bit, I understand. So we're really looking forward to that. Also, y'all might know Sarah Fernandez from PFLAG. She's also done a large number of interviews, and we're looking forward to having some information about what PFLAG's holdings of interviews might be. Because think about it like this. If you were an historian, right, or if you were a student and you wanted to kind of find out about a particular time in Houston's history, where would you go to find that gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender history? Where would you go?
The Gay History Museum, of course.
Oh, which is where?
Wait. We don't have one.
Not one. We've got like 10 billion.
Yes.
They're scattered in people's basements. They're in the Resurrection MCC Church.
Exactly.
They're in a storage unit because GCAM has been fabulous about storing stuff, but it's been difficult to get a space to display.
No place to display.
Exactly.
We need a capital campaign for a huge building on Montrose and Westheimer. Two stories. Okay, I see it. Granite.
I see your life mission formed for you right now.
Yeah. Create that possibility.
It's all about just a little bit of money, okay, you know, a couple million dollars.
but the most important thing is we've got an event on Thursday.
Absolutely, absolutely. So at the main library, the central library,
okay, now where,
on McKinney, it's 500 McKinney.
Okay.
You're going to go to the fourth floor. It's going to be that fabulous fourth floor meeting room.
I haven't seen it.
Haven't been there since they renovated.
It's a fantastic facility. They're really, really, they put a lot into it.
Fourth good. Floor, and what floor. Time is it?
7 to 9 p.m.
7 to 9 p.m.
7 to 9 p.m.
Like a amphitheater, like seating? Is it like kind of just a gathering where people are going to talk, or is it just displays?
It's their standard meeting room.
Okay.
We're going to have some display stuff out there. There will be archivists there to help you talk about how to preserve the stuff that you have. And there'll also be a chance for the people who have holdings. They might want to share to with other people to give to an archive, perhaps. Maybe there's someone who's got some organizational papers. They're just dying to get out of their attic. Now they know where to bring them.
Now, if our listeners are out there and they have things they want to bring, do they need to contact someone or do they just show up with?
Well, the best thing to do might be to leave your stuff at home and come and talk with someone about what you have, because there's going to be a lot of people there and there's going to be a lot of material there. So you don't want to lose your stuff while you're there.
No. You don't want to bring something. One, it might be bulky and you don't want to do that.
This is not the Antiques Roadshow.
Yeah, no. This is where you would make your contacts with people concerning that and talk about those things.
Mm-hmm.
And is any of this stuff really valuable, other than its historical value and sentimental value to our community?
Well, let me tell you actually how it's been useful for students at Rice University.
Okay.
One of the things that's been happening for the past few years is the introduction to lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender studies.
Yes.
Has been engaged in this community research project where the students go out and they interview people who've been doing stuff in the community.
Yes, they interviewed me.
Absolutely. Fancy we bring that up.
Yes.
So,
what is that?
One of the hard things, though, for the students has been to find the background material for these people. I mean, we've got this great community here, but where's the, you know, oh, I know that Jennifer's been interviewed here, 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 and here. I don't want to ask her those same questions all over again.
Right.
How do we find that? We don't want to bore Jennifer to death, right? So what do we do? That's exactly why an archives like this might be useful for students. But think of it also from the purposes of political organizing in the community. Where's our community memory? Our community memory took a severe hit in the 80s. And
Ray
I don't think,
Hill.
Well,
he's not the only one.
He is one of many, but he's a fantastic
bastion
of our memory.
But that's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
It's all a living memory. It's very much the storyteller, the history of the medieval periods. It's just the storytellers.
The dark days of the
70s. They have to tell the stories as they related in their own lives.
Absolutely.
And their own history, as each of us do, but there's not that one spot where you can go and see our history and
Absolutely.
Be part of it.
And bless the raconteurs among us who can give us those histories now, but there will be one day where, you know, they might look to us and we kind of scratch our heads and say, well, I think Ray told it this way, or I think that Nancy Ford told it this way, or Tim Brookover, or somebody, but we want to make sure. And that's why we need this.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Let's recap.
Oh.
Yes, I want to know. Tell us all about it one more time.
Okay.
So
here's the nitty-gritty. This Thursday at 7 p.m. on the fourth floor of the main library at 500 McKinney downtown.
Yes.
You can come to meet people who have been holding LGBT archives for some time professionally or on a volunteer basis. Talk with archivists who can give you professional advice and mix and mingle with other people who care about LGBT history. And you never know, you might make a new friend.
If someone would like to follow up with you, is there a contact information?
The best thing for people to do to follow up on this would be to contact the public library directly. The event organizer is Jo Collier. Her phone number is 832-393-1568. You can also speak with Jennifer Schwartz. She is the program coordinator for the Central Library.
All right. Thank you very much, Professor.
Thank y'all so much for everything y'all do.
And this is Queer Voices.
And this is Jamie Anderson, When Cats Take Over the World.
shape indeed. There's too much anger and greed, but I can see through the gloom. Change is coming soon, when folks will be very nice, and tuna will plummet in price. One will be kind. You could jump on the counter and eat whatever you find. You could cough up a hairball and no one would mind. Maybe we'd all purr when cats take over the world. Everyone will keep their claws. Dogs will be shown no mercy. They'll be shipped to New Jersey. There will be no more cars. Cat haters will be sent to Mars. When cats take over the world, all troubles will cease. You could jump on bookcase and knock over whatever you please. You could clean your butthole in front of company. In public we could hurl when cats take over the world. Something there. We'll learn meditation and perfect manipulation. No one will ever get wet or have to go to the vet. When cats take over the world, when cats take over the world. Take over the world. Take over the world. Take over the world.
That's the cat purring.
Yeah. And of course, like any decent homosexual person, cats have taken over my world.
I have too. I know what you mean. That's why I was laughing so hard in here.
And again, that was Jamie Anderson. That was one of those nice pieces that J.D. Doyle provides for us. The librarian extraordinaire of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender music. And we're so lucky to have him right here in our very own city and helping us out.
Absolutely.
So what you got?
Well, you probably all heard about this, but an HIV study finds that the rate is 40% higher than estimated.
Yeah, but didn't the government hide that from us for some reason?
Yes, for about 6 months. This was announced in Mexico City. Actually, it was leaked a few days earlier, and it was on the front page of New York Times yesterday. It's really interesting. They were estimating about 40,000 people are affected each year that they know of, but in reality, they found out it was 56,300. Of course, this is all estimates, but it's really interesting that here's another government agency that seems to be hiding what the facts are, and then when, you know, they finally put it out later on. And this, you know, could have mean more funding, possibly, and a number
of
things. We're hoping next week to actually put together an interview and give sort of an update what's going on the International Conference on AIDS. Yeah. There was also something else that I just read, that even though the Congress has overwhelmingly veto-proof voted on dropping the ban of allowing HIV people into the country to visit.
Yes.
That the administration may still use this on a case-by-case basis of who discriminate against.
Oh, jeez.
I'm not sure how verifiable that email that I got, but it wouldn't surprise me. But
it's unfortunate that we have an administration that acts in a way that we have to question anything about them. That when something like that comes out, you can almost believe it because it's so anti-equality or civil rights.
Well, there was a very good interview on Fresh Air today talking about this gentleman who wrote a book that basically says they're purposely mismanaging the government because they want to make it smaller. But in reality, they give out the contracts to their business buddies who also, you know, don't do what they're supposed to do.
Of course.
They're totally mismanaging so many things that are going on. And, you know, every day we read something else, and it's just amazing that people put up with this. Hopefully the election will solve some of that, but we still, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Can I put a plug in for the caucus?
Sure.
This Wednesday is the Houston GLBT Political Caucus General Meeting, and this is a special meeting because it's the endorsement meeting. The caucus has been working diligently to screen candidates. They've invited all candidates, and we screened as many as were there, and it's the time for the general membership to vote. The reception begins at 6:30, and at 7, the meeting will start promptly, and we'll be able to vote on who the caucus will endorse in the upcoming election. It's at, 1827 West Alabama. It's the Haven Center, right next to the Chocolate Bar.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey, sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy.
I'm sure many of our listeners know our next guest, and if you don't, you should. Joining us tonight is Fred Walters, Jr. from the Houston Buyers Club. Hi, Fred.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great.
So what is the Houston Buyers Club, if there's any person out there that doesn't know?
We are a marijuana buyers club for people. No, I'm just kidding. No, we...
Oh, my God. The brass at KPFT are doing.
No. Everyone thinks we sell drugs. We never did sell drugs, but we did get a lot of calls from the FDA when we first started, or rather, I should say, from the U.S. government, because that's what would show up on our caller ID. And they would talk in code. Coming through town, is Mary Jane in? Who?
Mary Jane.
So I got my marijuana lingo when we first started, because I didn't. I was a marijuana virgin and at the time, and but anyway, the Buyers Club was founded accidentally, to be honest with you.
Oh, I don't know the story. Tell me. Tell us.
We were going to, I was working for People with AIDS Coalition at the time, and this fax came over, and I was in charge. I was the little case manager assistant, translated someone with a degree, but didn't know what he wanted to do yet. Mm-hmm. So I was helping people fill out their applications, and I saw this fax, and it said, learn how to survive until there's a cure. And I thought, oh, this sounds interesting. So I went to it, and it was given by a man named Nelson Virgil, who's now one of my dearest friends, and he's one of my heroes, one of my mentors. Yeah. And he gave this three-hour presentation at the City of Houston Multi-Service Center, and he put up on this big PowerPoint these 12 or 14 or 15 nutritional supplements that I had never heard of. And he said, if you want to live until there's a cure, you should take all these supplements in these doses. So I took a friend of mine to a local health food store, and they couldn't find most of the supplements, and the ones that they did find cost me $250 for a month's supply.
Mm. Crazy.
So as I wrote that check, I remember it was a yellow check, and I started turning red, and I thought, how am I going to cover this check? I need to ask my best friend for a short-term loan, and it was ridiculous. So I was only making $20,000 a year at the time.
When was this? What time?
Maybe 12 years ago.
So at the very beginning, where there was, you know, not the therapies that they have today, you know.
Right.
So very scary time, and you're paying out money that you really didn't have to get these things that would help extend your life.
Right. I didn't even have insurance at the time.
Yeah.
And so at the time, you know, we didn't have effective drugs. We just had hope that somewhere out there, someone was developing a drug in another country, because it wasn't happening in the U.S.
That's right.
And we, you know, and we were all, there was all this research being done on supplements and, you know, how to manage side effects using nutritional supplements. So one thing led to another. And I called Nelson a couple weeks later, and I said, I am really angry. How in the world do we get a buyer's club in Houston, like you talked about in your lecture, where there's a buyer's club in New York, L.A., San Francisco, Boston, and Atlanta? How do we get one here? And he and three other activists in the city, James Alexander, who's a personal trainer, Alan Huff, Joel Martinez, who helped co-found the Center for AIDS,
right,
and Nelson Virgil and myself, they helped me get involved in this service, which kind of accidentally grew from providing six supplements to help keep people well in my closet to eventually coming out of the closet. And but
wink, no pun intended,
to you know, different locations, each time a different location that was larger and more accessible to people. So now we have this great location across the street from Half-Price Books that says vitamins, herbs, sports nutrition on
sports
it.
Nutrition. No, it's like a fabulous palace of a storefront.
It's a really great energy. We have mustard-colored walls. We have wonderful staff. We have very helpful staff. We get lots of compliments on our location.
Yes, I love it.
And every Pride, it is, well, it's central for the Pride Committee, and that's all I'm going to say about it. But we're happy to do that, and we love supporting them. But anyway, you know, I have to say that I too saw the Channel 11 news story about the new HIV breakthrough.
Yes.
And I got all excited, and then I called Nelson, one of my mentors and dear friends, and I said, hey, what do you think? Did you hear about the story? Did you hear about the breakthrough? And I should have known better. And he says, oh, Chica, don't get too excited. We knew about that a month ago. So I said, well, what about it? He says, well, it's just in vitro right now. You know, when they start doing human trials, then get excited. If it's still helping, then get excited. So,
you know, it's something. You know, something to a hope.
It's a different avenue of turning off the virus, which I don't think they've thought of before.
Well, we're going to try to have someone on next week's program to talk about that.
Oh, cool.
Someone, you know. I'm trying to get someone from the Center for AIDS, because, you know, I'm involved with that, and have them come out next week. But let's get back to the Houston Buyers Club.
Cool.
So it started out in your closet. Now it's this fantastic storefront, and as a matter of fact, anyone can go.
Yeah. We are open to the public, and actually, part of our strategy in moving to that location was, you know, not outing people when they would come in. In the old location, which was on the sixth floor of the Scott Gertner Skybar building,
3,400.
And I have a lot of friends in that building, but honestly, I mean, it really, there were a lot of maintenance issues. And if you were seen in our location there, in our offices, it was pretty much assumed that you were HIV positive.
Right.
So this location kind of camouflages the fact that you are positive, and unless you come out and say it to the staff there, in earshot of other clients, then, you know, you could just be anyone in there getting their multivitamins or vitamin C or whatever.
Or supplements, yeah.
Yeah. And we just, we have this wonderful collaboration now with University of Houston's Department of Dietetics, meaning we have registered dietitian interns that come in and volunteer for a full month. So we are now a rotation so that interns can learn about supplements. And that came about because I was getting all this resistance from local registered dietitians in the work that I do with HIV clients. And the resistance was, what the hell do you got against supplements? And, you know, we've been doing this work in for 12 years. We know what works for diarrhea and neuropathy and things like that. Mm-hmm. And they just were bad-mouthing it. So I called up the University of Houston's chair and of this department and said, hey, this is what I'd like to do. I'd like to teach your interns about the use of supplements and the use of supplements in chronic disease, and you could teach us how to be more clinical in our approach. And so it was a great marriage, and we're on our fourth intern, and we're getting rave reviews.
I bet it's a fun rotation.
It is. It's much more relaxed than MD Anderson.
Oh, I can.
I will say that.
Especially with the clientele that come in there, I bet.
Yeah, the clients are fun. They're relaxed. But our staff, I mean, we like to laugh a lot in the store.
Y'all do.
We do. And we have a lot of fun.
Laughing. I'm like, is there any work going on here?
And we have a variety of music that we sometimes it's Frank Sinatra, sometimes it's Janis Joplin, or sometimes Elvis Presley.
We have listeners that.
I'm just kidding.
It can't be all dance music all the time.
But it's a really cool place where people can get a lot of information about different things. It's not just HIV anymore for us. It's about hepatitis. It's about gout. It's about side effects from cancer. It's just general questions about weight loss or muscle gain. You wouldn't believe that people, how many people actually believe what they read. And, you know, so they'll believe the ads in muscle magazines.
They're not true?
No, or in Women's Day, you know. And so we find ourselves dispelling a lot of the myths about weight loss and about muscle gain, which brings me to my big point.
You're going to tell us how to lose weight?
There is this pill that we sell called the Magic Pill.
The Magic Pill.
And
ooh, tell us more.
Actually, it's what I've nicknamed it. It's called the Magic Pill. And the only problem is it's a really big pill to swallow, so most people won't take it.
Like physically, like a big pill, not like a metaphor.
Well, and I'm actually talking about a metaphor.
Oh, okay.
But it really, truly is diet, exercise, and supplements. It's not just supplements. Sorry.
Oh.
I want the pill where you can take it and never have to go to the gym.
Yeah.
But we are addressing that issue this weekend, actually. It's a free education event at Bering Memorial Church. It's in the hood here.
Yes. It's on... Bering, yeah.
But, I mean,
it's on Mulberry Street.
For those who
Mulberry at Herald.
Mulberry at Herald.
1440 Herald. But it's a free event. We're actually televising it. We're filming it for television. That's what I mean to say. And we're teaching women how to lose weight properly. And we address how to beat sugar cravings, how to give up sodas. Do you know that there's this one, can I say the word, that begins with a B and ends with an H on the air? Because it's the title.
Mm.
No?
Nope.
Okay. Anyway, it's called Skinny B. And it's written by a woman who is a master's nutritionist and another woman whose credentials I can't. But she says Cokes are liquid Satan.
They are.
They are. I mean, they hide chemicals that your body doesn't know what to do with, so it recycles it and tells your genes and your DNA to do weird things. But anyway, we're having this workshop called Weight Loss for Women at Bering, and we teach people how to eat right, how to give up sodas, how to beat the sugar cravings, how to exercise. What kind of exercise are we talking about? You know, so we're expecting about 80 or 90 people.
Now, when is this now?
It's this Saturday, August 9th.
Okay.
Arrival is 9:30. Program begins at 10. And if you want to come, you don't have to RSVP. We only ask people to RSVP so we have enough, you know, drinks.
Krispy Kremes.
Enough sodas.
Enough sodas.
Sodas and Krispy Kremes.
Yes. And Krispy Kremes.
That's the seminar. The actual weight part starts later.
Oh.
Yeah, that's next week.
That's like Garfield, the best time to lose weight is tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yes. We digress.
That's all right. It's being given by our own registered dietitian.
Is this one of the U of H people?
Well, actually, she is a U of H person, but we found her quite by accident. We found her through one of our customers and they said, Kim's an intern right now and she's looking for a part-time job. So we got her in there. We liked her. And Kim is, she practices what she preaches. She teaches spin classes. She teaches cooking classes and exercise classes, aerobics. She's in shape.
I mean, that. You know what I hate is trainers that are overweight. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm not gonna listen to you. I'm sorry. I like people that do what they say.
Yeah,
I want to know how to exercise in the kitchen. While I'm cooking.
Exercise called, while eating.
While cooking. I want to exercise while cooking.
Well, let's see. Let me think about that one. I don't know. I'll get back to you. I'll get back to you on that one.
Okay.
But you know what Kim says? She says abs are made in the kitchen, not in the gym.
Everybody has abs.
See, I just asked.
No, everybody has abs. It's not everybody can see them.
That's true.
So, it's about... It's unfortunately, it's the cardio and the diet and...
I have abs. It's just that they're well padded.
Yes, you have the...
they're guarded.
The padded abs.
he's preparing for the hurricane.
All right. How are they made in the kitchen? How do you do abs in
the
kitchen?
It's in the diet. It's in the type of food. Like, for example, you can eat, junk food, but you just can't do it all the time. And I could do it, honestly, I could do it a whole lot more than other folks could because my metabolism was so high. But other folks have a slower metabolism and they couldn't do it.
Yeah, mine's slow.
So you really, truly, that old infomercial that you see late at night about eating 5 to 7 meals a day to lose weight, it works. But you also have to do 30 to 45 minutes of cardiovascular exercise like Stairmaster or Precor several times a week also.
It's always the exercise.
Well, no, you have to do cardio with Gloria Estefan. That's the only way to do it.
Well, I just joined this new gym, Toy Fire Fitness in Midtown, and it's, I'm getting motivated.
It's beautiful.
It's a palace, and there's a lot of eye candy. I'm just saying, very...
Lots of girls.
Girls are pretty much invisible. They are. I mean, I don't really notice girls, but yes, they are there. But I mean, it's very motivating. So not that I'm saying. I'm just saying that, to get motivated to do cardio, that's a good place to go.
Yeah. And I love the Food Network. So on the Stairmaster with the Food Network.
I love the Food Network.
Barefoot Contessa is my favorite. Have y'all ever seen her?
I watch her. The thing I hate about that show is the gratuitous close-ups. Next time you watch, they do these super zoom in. Like on the food she's cooking, and it's like gratuitous, and it's just too much. I'm like, I don't need to see the water bubbles boiling at the bottom of the pan.
How good is that?
I mean, it's just what she says.
You're just not a real food person.
I could watch Food Network constantly.
Me too. Oh, okay. So if you really like the Food Network, there's a bank at the corner of West Alabama, across the street from Whole Foods near Kirby. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can say it, but they have the Food Network playing as you're making your deposits.
That's wonderful.
That's clever. Tell us more about the Buyers Club.
What other things do you do? I know that you were creating a video based on the side effects of HIV meds.
Yes. And actually, we host one or two education events a year, and what happens every single time is people say, they'll call us ahead of time and say, are you going to tape it? I can't make it. I have to work this weekend. Or they'll call us the next week after it happens and they say, hey, I heard it was really, really good. Is that speaker coming back to town? So I finally got tired of those questions and I said, that's it. We've got to find a way to tape it. And so I rented one of those tape machines from a place, and it was cassette tape, and it was a royal pain because there were cords going everywhere and I had to be in charge of it. So at some point last year I said, I need to find a way to tape this for television so that we can put this on the web and people can watch it, because it's just really good. We got connected to this production company called Cool Arrow Films, and they're doing it for below cost. They're doing it for the mission of it. So we have 3 cameras, professional lights, professional sound, professional editing, and they have put together for us 4 shows. 2 of them are on HIV, one's on diabetes, one is on hepatitis B and C. Mm. So the weight loss for women, this weekend will be taped for television. And so we'll be able to, you know, put that on the air also. Where we went after, we presented our shows to the local PBS affiliate, and they were too, I want to say they were too radical, or they weren't general enough. They were too specific for their program audience, we were told. So we are going after the Discovery Health Network.
Oh, that'll be
and
good.
Hoping, oh, and you know, our shows might not get on there, but the information, we may give them the information and they may turn it into a whole different show. So that's what our goal is. So in the meantime, we are talking with our host server to see. Apparently, it's quite expensive to put.
It's very expensive to put
an hour show
video
on there.
Streaming. Yeah, it's a lot of bandwidth.
So that's what we're trying to do. But for now, if people want, you know, they can send me an email, and when the DVD is ready for mass production, we're happy to send those DVDs out.
Well, let's give our listeners your email.
It's really easy. It's Amazing Fred. No, I'm just kidding. It's just Fred.
Give us your business one, not your hookup one.
It's F-R-E-D, as in Flintstone, Fred at Houston Buyers Club. That's HoustonBuyersClub.com. But, oh, go ahead.
They can, when you'll email them the file, or you'll just get in contact with them and give them like a DVD?
Probably for now, we're just going to be making copies, because we, to be honest with you, we've already got a two-hour show on two different DVDs, and it's our best one. We brought Dr. John Kaiser to Houston last year, and he's an MD who used to work in a health food store. And the reason why he became a physician was because of his work in a health food store.
Really?
He saw all of these natural remedies working for people that would come in there. And so after he graduated medical school, HIV was just coming on the scene, and he threw himself into the natural remedies to help his patients with side effects. So the protocol we have for neuropathy that a lot of diabetics get comes from him. But he's amazing. I mean, he's got all these tests and treatments that he says you should tell your doctor to do these tests and treatments when you first become his patient. And you need to have these done every 6 months or once a year, because it's important. It tells the physician a lot of things. A lot of physicians don't know about these new tests and treatments that are out there. And that's the whole reason why we did these DVDs, is so that we could also educate the physicians too. You know, HIV is the only field that has become patient-driven. Diabetics, cancer patients, hepatitis folks, they are not telling their physicians what to do. It's the HIV ones that are telling their physicians what to do.
Well, the patients are usually more educated on the forefront of the
yes,
knowledge.
That's right. And
because they have to be from the beginning, you know.
So hopefully that the... I just... Actually, one of the interns' projects was... One of our more recent projects that we had them do was to take the DVD and watch it. And every time a word or a phrase would come up that was unfamiliar to most people, like a vitamin name, like alpha lipoic acid.
Not a very common word.
Right. No.
Yeah.
Right. So her job was to say, okay, at 12:31, we need to put on the screen this word. So... that was done, and then as soon as that's done by the producer, or the production coordinator, rather, then it will be ready for, the DVD will be ready for distribution.
But this is such an amazing tool, I think, that could be used globally. I mean, not just in Houston. I mean, it could touch everybody in the world, I mean, that's dealing with the side effects.
Yeah.
And so maybe lots of money.
You know, and we have visions of doing a lot of different shows throughout, you know, the year.
Yeah.
And the thing is it costs like $6,000 to do one of these. So if any of your listeners have a little check to write, well, we are 501c3.
Yes, very. Yeah, and I know that there are organizations out there that put on events that support your 501c3, your nonprofit.
Yeah. Now, let's see. I wonder who they are.
I'm not going to talk about... Well, because...
in BCBC, we had the Jungle Party, and Houston Buyers Club was a beneficiary. And
yes.
I remember this program specifically.
Oh, that's right.
I remember this program, and you were very detailed in what you were going to do with the money, and I was like, this is a great program, so I was kind of pushing for that. And you know, you got to turn off your phone.
So sorry. So sorry.
Okay, let's recap. We have Mr. Fred.
Do you need to take that call?
No.
It's okay.
I forgot to turn my phone off.
We're only on the air.
He'll call you back after he's done. Okay, Fred from the Houston Buyers Club. Where is the Houston? What is the address there?
3224 Yoakum Boulevard.
Okay, so like at the corner of Yoakum.
Montrose. Yeah, I'm sorry. No, you're right. Yoakum and Westheimer.
Yeah.
Which is near Montrose and Westheimer.
Very close. Across the street from Half Price Books.
Yes.
And you, wonderful programs throughout the year and, of course, open to the public.
I have to say this one thing. How much time do I have? 20 minutes? I'm just kidding.
We got it,
20 seconds.
However much time you need.
Okay. Well,
you have another 7 minutes.
Oh, cool. Great. Okay, so in 1991... No, I'm just kidding.
At the time. No, go ahead.
In September, we're planning... we don't have a specific date yet, but we're planning an open house because expanded our store, our storefront. So our registered dietitian is actually in the store now. So you could actually just walk up to her and ask her questions. She's only going to be there Thursdays and Fridays.
Okay.
We've expanded our shelf space
40%.
She's there from 9:30 to 5.
Okay.
But Thursdays and Fridays, the other thing we're doing is we are going to kick off our biggest fundraiser of the year, which is the AIDS Walk that AFH does. It's the Houston Buyers Club team. We need tons of members, tons of members. Our goal is $100,000. So that's what
that's we're crazy.
I know.
But that's,
I know.
It's the goal.
Well, a lot of us have watched The Secret.
There you go.
And
send out those
create that possibility.
We're putting it. We actually
send it out to the
one
universe.
Of our, what's it called? The South Wall will be our vision board.
Good. Good.
Wow.
So, but we're going to have an open house in September, and if you want to be on that mailing list, we have a couple people that may be popping in to be our celebrity host.
Ooh. Tell us more.
Okay. I'd like to tease you, but it would only be in fun.
Okay.
Okay. Don't do that. Don't do that now.
Later. No. Just kidding.
The other thing is, come out for this weekend. You're going to learn a lot. It's free. We're going to be giving out samples of Pellegrino flavored with stevia. By the way, that's something that your listeners could do now. There is this plant that you can grow in your backyard, but most people don't want to grow a plant and then, grind it up and add water and add it to their sodas. So you can buy this, extract in most health food stores, and it's all natural. It's called stevia, and it's flavored.
What does it do? Tell
us. Well, it makes the water taste like a Coke.
Really?
Yeah. Or just what I do, I buy peach tea, and it needs to be sweetened, and so there's this unflavored stevia, and it's a liquid, and you just drop it in, and it flavors it naturally, so it's not white sugar.
But it's like a sugar, like a sweet additive that doesn't have any calories.
Mm. How does it go in coffee?
Honestly, not very good.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I'm a big coffee whore, so it doesn't
then
go.
You know why I had to ask.
Yeah. But, that's one thing that people can do. The other thing that people can do to help lose weight is meet with a nutritionist, and that's something that they can do in our store. I think we charge, if you make more than $42,000 a year, we charge $60 an hour.
And so reasonable.
Yeah, it's very. And most places start at $150.
And so you'll get a comprehensive diet program.
You'll get help with your diet. You'll get.
I need that.
And if you're below the poverty line?
If you're below the poverty line, there is a sliding scale. If you're living with a chronic health condition, it's free.
Oh. Very good.
So,
good to know.
Yeah.
Judge, I hope y'all heard that.
Yes.
Yeah. So we have a lot of little tips like that. One thing I will tell you along the HIV front, skipping to a different subject, one thing that we're seeing dramatic results in our clients with HIV is their T cells going up dramatically, sometimes 40%, sometimes 100%.
Hmm.
And I'm going to exercise caution when I say this, but when they're doing green tea tablets or green tea capsules,
really?
Which is available in most health food stores, right here in Houston, Dr. Christina Nance working at Baylor College of Medicine. Mm-hmm. She's heading up a study that is trying to figure out how exactly green tea works in the body so they can extract a drug out of that research. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we've never seen T cells in HIV go up so much.
Is this in combination with the cocktail? And
well, either or. People could take it with their meds or without their meds. Mm-hmm. You know, we always encourage people to tell their doctors anything that they're taking in the way of supplements for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they can mix. Supplements are chemicals, even though they're natural.
And
so
that could be
an interaction.
Some bonus effect that we didn't know about.
That's right.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is it's only like $7 or $10 a month. So that's quite...
And a 40% increase in T cells.
Yeah. Well... In most of the people who've done them, I mean, I don't want to say that across the board, but you know, we had one client that we didn't know till later, but you know, his T cells had actually plunged, and we didn't figure out why until later, and it was because he had stage 4 syphilis.
Mm.
So, I mean, he his immune system was shot anyway. Mm. So, I think he's taking it again. I don't know what his status is now, but that's one thing that people could research is the work that Dr. Christina Nance is doing. We're those of us who are desperate and trying to raise those T cells, we're doing it now. We're not waiting for the research.
Can't wait, yeah.
Right. Well, we need to wrap it up. So, what do we need to do now? Let's go back over where you are and how to contact
you. Who are you?
Yes.
I am Fred Walters, Jr., founding director of what the IRS knows us as, a program for side effects management.
Okay.
Better known as Houston Buyers Club. We're at the corner of Yoakum and Westheimer, near the intersection of Montrose and Westheimer.
Right.
And if you'd like more information, go to our website, HoustonBuyersClub.com, mm-hmm. or email me at fred@HoustonBuyersClub.com. And if you look in Outsmart, you'll see the ad. It's on page 39.
Look at him knowing the page number.
He's got it open to that page. All right. Well, Fred, we want to thank you for coming. And
sure.
It's just been delightful spending time with you and talking about it. And this is Queer Voices.
Thank you, Fred.
Just who has real family values and whose lives are sorted? We'll head down south for the answers to that question later in the program. Hip-hop that's not straight, folk rock that's also country, and a dangerous dream come true, jazz up this edition of The Audiophile.
The new album by hip-hop artist Milaj Lavon is called The Movement. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile. This album definitely shows that she is very talented and very political.
Dear Mr. President, but it shouldn't really affect the fate of the nation from just one dude. Got a lot to repair. America's right here. We all waiting for you to lead us through. We gotta get back, yeah, on the right track. What's the blueprint in your next move?
You'll also find in her album that hip-hop is a genre not reserved for straight topics.
The album covers a lot of issues like gay bashing, global warming, gay parenting, domestic violence within the community, future president, gay marriage, and very proud of this album because it's a lot of issues that need to be.
So I gotta be strong, now I got my reason to stand up for people like Kev who stop grieving, cause I'm there with you every step of the way. You ain't gotta be afraid of what society say, cause I've been there before the law's point in my life. Consider suicide.
To find out more about Milaj Lavon and her album, The Movement, we'll help you out with the spelling. Her site is at www.melanglavonne.com.
thousand shades of gray. Black and white. Why does the world want to be black and white? It makes me sad and I know it's not right for all the world to be that way.
The debut album by Maury Campbell is called Long Way Home. And with it, at least I feel like I'm in this warm and comfortable place, like I'm with an old friend.
There's a wide variety of musical styles. I got stripped down vocal acoustic guitar tracks. I have tracks with the full band. And I go from folk to rock country. And I think people will really enjoy the listen.
Not only to
you can learn more about Maury Campbell and his album, Long Way Home, at www.maurycampbell.com. www.morry and the letter c.com.
Let me love you. Let me say that I do. If you lend me your ear, I'll make it clear the ways that I do. Let me whisper it. Let me sigh it. Let me sing it, my dear. Or I will cry it.
Suede is back, and this time with a big band. First album in 7 years.
Oh, I'm thrilled about it. It's called Dangerous Mood, which I named appropriately for my 25th anniversary of making my whole living with music, which has certainly been dangerous and thrilling. And it's recorded with a 14-piece big band, which is a childhood dream of mine. So I'm just thrilled to get it out to the world, and I hope everybody loves it.
We could go the distance and find us romance. I like your persistence, your style and your sense. There's only one problem, the tiniest problem. I like to bleed when I dance.
Find out more about Dangerous Mood, the latest CD by Suede, at www.suedewave.com. That's www.suedewave.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at our new address, 594 Sawdust Road, number 273, Spring, Texas, 77380. Or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiofile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
And you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
I gets in touch with his southern roots and sets a spell with the folk behind the new logo TV hit, Sordid Blonde. Creator, writer, director Del Shores and his producer, star husband, Jason Dotley.
Last week on Laundry Day, a red sock found its way into a load of white stuff.
and now I sleep on pink sheets. So it's no surprise to me that Sordid Lives, a TV show about a white trash family in a redneck town, just debuted on Logo, the country's pinkest network.
I did not need to know that.
Or that this summer, fans of playwright Del Shores are happier than a fat tick on a skinny dog.
I certainly did not need to know that.
This prequel to the cult classic film,
Off and Running,
is about a small town Texas family, presided over by Peggy Ingram, played by Rue McClanahan, whose beloved brother boy, played by Leslie Jordan, is a Tammy Wynette impersonator living in a state mental hospital.
I'm Dr. Eve. When you de-homosexualize me, will I still perform as Tammy Wynette?
Peggy's good time daughter, Lavonda, lives with Peggy's sister, Sissy, a chain-smoking caretaker who doles out the family Valium.
Well, thank goodness I've got another bottle in the medicine cabinet.
Bonnie Belinda is Peggy's uptight and controlling daughter, Latrell.
There's a new therapist over at the institution, Dr. Eve Bollinger, who thinks she can the voice. I was watching Jenny Jones here a while back, and they were saying homosexuality. Voice.
That is not the point.
Well, it seems like it would be the point in this, for instance.
Lita, played by Carolyn Ray, lives in Sissy's backyard in a trailer. Your crippled husband, G.W.
Here's the deal, Sissy. G.W. has been pressuring me to do something I don't want to do sexually.
Oh, sweet baby Jesus.
He wants to make love to me without them legs on.
Oh, why me, Lord? Why?
Adorable Jason Dartley plays Latrell's son, Ty, a struggling L.A. actor who's also struggling with his sexuality.
Okay, that's it. I'm out of here.
Fine, leave. But maybe it's time you learn compassion for others instead of being like every other and homosexual in this vapid town. All about me, me, me.
I thought therapy was supposed to be about me. And I am here because I am not sure that I am a homosexual.
Oh, trust me, honey. You are a big old queer.
Throw in Olivia Newton-John as Bitsy Mae Harling, a bisexual bar singer fresh out of prison, with cameos from Margaret Cho, Carson Kressley, and Candace Kane as Ty's therapists. And all I can say is, if it were any better, I'd have to hire someone to help me enjoy it.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Del Shores. I am a writer and producer and director, and my series Sordid Lives just started airing on Logo.
Hi, I'm Jason Dotley. I am the adorable new guy in Sordid Lives, the series.
How autobiographical is this?
With Sordid Lives, I am basically Ty, the character of Ty and Latrell. That's a relationship with my mom, and I basically just lifted my therapy sessions. The one great thing about my mom, and when she passed away, I found all of these files where she had done so much research on my behalf about gay. She really wanted to be informed, and I wish that other people in my family would do that, because she wanted to know what it was about, and asking way too many questions. You know, the first time I go home is like Christmas. I bring my daughters, they're 2 and 5 at the time, and my mother comes into my bedroom, and she says, I need to ask you some questions. And I go, oh, okay. And she goes, what is it exactly that you do? And I'm like, what? And, you know, she goes, you know, gay stuff. What do you do? And I'm like, oh my God, mother, I am not going to talk to you about this. There are books you can read. And then, well, finally she just kept on, and I thought, okay, you know what? So I just basically looked at my lap and started explaining a lot of things. I left some things out, but that was the kind of mom she was. And then there's that long pause. She goes, well, are you the woman or the man? Mother, I'm a gay man. We don't... Anyway.
While the character he plays, the Sordid Lives TV series, is confused about his sexuality, Jason Dotley is not. And he wants you to know.
And so many straight actors are playing gay, is that most gay actors won't play gay. It's very frustrating to me as a gay man, because I see it as a form of internalized homophobia, and I don't know if it's being reinforced from their families or from their... But regardless, it's really sort of an annoying attribute that many of my fellow gay actors ship get over it.
When did you know you were gay?
I came out in my 10th grade year of high school to my mom and friends, and I took it as the greatest difference in the world. It was such an empowering thing for me to be so different than everybody else, and I really embraced that. And I started my high school's Gay Straight Alliance in Spring Hill, Florida, which was very successful. Someone asked me the other day in an interview about being gay and being out, etc. And I said, why would you want to be so successful and live in a cage? Why?
Not only is Jason Dotley the leading man in Sordid Lives, the series, he's Del Shore's leading man at home.
We were married in October of 2003, October 26th, on the beach of Malibu, and now we have just applied for our marriage license to be legally married in the state of California.
And I think that Newell Alexander, who plays Wardell, who more interestingly is Del's former father-in-law, is going to be presiding over our nuptials.
What do you want the audience to take away from the show?
I want people to be able to laugh during a great period in American history. And if for 30 minutes a week, if people can just forget that outside world and laugh and feel with these characters, then that was my intention for this, because it is very funny, but it is often touching. The Republicans, they're always talking about family values, and yet they continue to knock my family through their constitutional amendments and speak hatred, basically, from pulpits and political forums. So I feel like that I'm giving people something to embrace. It's a quirky family, but basically the series is about love and acceptance and family and our values.
And I like it that young gay people have someone to see on television that they can relate to. I didn't have that as a kid. I had, you know, Rupert Everett and Madonna as, you know, two prominent gay men in my stratosphere.
I like the way you call Madonna a gay man.
Well, like, come on. She's kind of as close as you can get.
This has been a visit with Del Shore and Jason Dotley. Sordid Lives, the series, airs on the U.S. Cable Network Logo. I'm Steve Proctor. Thanks for listening.
Why should I care what they whisper about me? I tell the truth, but still they'll doubt me. Been misunderstood for all.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Chris Wilson, Pam Marshall, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Melange Lavant, Maury Campbell, Suede, and Olivia Newton-John performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out operating expenses are funded by charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to help keep us on the air. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of all our programs there. To receive weekly email alerts describing the content of each This Way Out, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on 7THE Hobart, Tasmania, WRNC Ashland, Wisconsin, KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. And before you throw your pink fuzzy slippers at the radio, I should tell you that they were having some technical problems getting This Way Out uploaded today, and so that's probably why there were all those little glitchy, soundy thingies.
I thought that was me. I was like, it's my hearing.
I thought my hearing was going.
That's a technical term, you know,
Claire,
glitchy.
Check your battery on the hearing aid there.
Glitchy.
Hello?
Thingies. Glitchy thingies.
Glitchy thingies?
Yeah. So is it raining outside yet?
No, it's not raining outside yet, but I do have an update for you on still. That's right.
Weather
still.
Update.
Breaking news from KPFT studios.
This is still a weather tropical update storm. From KPFT.
But I understand there's been an increase in intensification of the storm. Tell us more.
That's right. That's an increase in interest, right? It's still Tropical Storm Edward. However, maximum winds are now up to 60 miles per hour with gusts to 70. The threshold, of course, for a hurricane is 74 miles per hour.
So you have to say it in a gay way. You've got to go, Edward.
Okay.
You said Edward.
You said
it's
Edward.
Not Edward.
Oh, I see.
This is a gay storm. It's Edward.
That's right. Well, I think you just did.
Yes.
All right. So, Edward.
Edward.
There you go. Is and you have to do like the limpress thing.
Well, I do that all the time. So
okay, we can't see that on the radio.
I know.
still supposed to make landfall, right over top of us. So it's supposed to land in our beds
tomorrow morning.
Well, that's only if you're in bed at noon.
Well, actually, I think we're going to start to feel the effects pretty good well before then. I suspect that by probably about 4 o'clock this morning, you're going to hear Edward making a noise outside your door.
Knocking at our doors?
Knocking at your door.
So this is predicted to be more of a rain event than...
What are they predicting?
No, see, the difference here is, though, because even though Edward is a tropical storm, because it's going to pass right over top of us, if you look at the diagram of the windshield...
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ordinarily, with a tropical storm, if it was going 50 miles this way or that way of you, all you'd get is rain. But we're going to get the full brunt of the windshield as well, which means that we're probably looking at, 40-mile-an-hour winds, 45-mile-an-hour winds, and gusting higher than that.
We're going to feel like a bug on that windshield.
We're going to feel like...
So mostly central Houston is going to get that, if wherever it hits landfall.
Well, see, now the windshield actually is a little bit bigger than you would normally think of for just a run-of-the-mill tropical storm,
because
this one is very close to being a hurricane and may actually be a hurricane by the time it hits, because this intensification happened just in the past couple of hours. And I really thought that it would have intensified around 4 o'clock this afternoon.
You would think so with, the heat of the day.
Right.
But at night, that's kind of interesting.
So it really looks like, we're going to get some pretty good wind out of this as well. So it's...
What's the wind supposed to be tomorrow?
Well,
is it giving any indication?
Yeah, it could go as high as 80 miles an hour.
Wow.
In gusts?
In gusts, yeah.
Some of the projected sustained winds?
Well, if it remains a tropical storm, then, of course, it'll be tropical storm force winds, which will be less than 74 miles an hour.
So between 40 and 74 is tropical storm force.
Okay.
Right. But not 75.
75 is hurricane force.
Right. So,
unless it becomes a hurricane, and then it'll be allowed to go to 75.
And places where that normally flood will probably flood, from them. Try to get, if you haven't bought groceries, your supplies for this next 48 hours, better
go
get
now.
Out and do it.
Go now.
Actually, I think this is going to be like, it's going to be like a tropical storm in the sense that we're going to get a whole lot of rain, because this is a very slow-moving storm.
Some flash flooding.
Mm-hmm. Some memories of Allison, perhaps.
And it's going to be a little bit like a hurricane in that because it's passing right over top of us, we're going to get that wind.
Trees are going to come down. Limbs are going to be broken.
Tree limbs, mainly, yeah.
And we're going to lose power.
No, don't say that.
It's in spotty places,
don't
yeah.
Don't say that.
Spotty there will be places, some spotty power loss
that would
here
be the
there,
worst
yeah.
possible thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
So be prepared with water and foodstuffs for your family.
Well, I tell you what, probably about noon today when people started realizing and businesses started letting out and so on, the Sam's stores, the hurricane hit early at Sam's.
I heard that the Kroger on West Gray was just swamped. Everybody just goes there and just, the community just goes there and attacks.
I went to Sam's later this evening. I tried to avoid the crowd. There was still a crowd, and the shelves were, the batteries were gone, and I imagine the water was gone. But I don't go for the bottled water thing because I have kept jugs of things like the juice comes in and so on. I just save those for hurricane time.
Well, that's exactly what I do.
Just fill them up from the tap.
That's what I do. I have several half gallon milk jugs that I fill, and so you have water.
That's recycling. That's very environmentally conscious.
It is. It's very environmentally.
You empty
conscious.
Out that 6 month old milk and then put the water in, right?
Empty out the cheese at the bottom.
Yes. No, I don't think so.
And of course, you can always. If you have a bathtub, you can always fill that and use that as your
Well, that's always
water.
Good to do anyway. If something should happen and the pumps lose power, you might not be able to flush the toilet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't want to drink that
that's
water
happened
out, of
before.
Out of the bathtub. Though.
No, you don't want to drink it out of the bathtub. So you want that in your Funky refrigerator water. In the proper. But there's a lot of other things they can do. Get your flashlight and batteries if you don't have them. Hunt for them. Candles if you don't have flashlight and batteries.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear all of this tomorrow on every TV channel because that's all they're going to be talking about.
And the picture of somebody always the one of
there's
the
reporter,
people, reporter
gonna go
out
stand
in the middle
the
of it saying, yeah. It's wind is blowing and the rain is tough, and they're just standing out there like a
never mind. Like, I think it was during a major storm a couple years ago. They had Al Roker that was blown to the side. He was just blown away in a major storm, and you know, it was just like, okay, seriously, do we really need live coverage from
they
the eyewall?
Well, they believe they're going to make their career on a hurricane.
Well,
like
one person
other
did
people
that.
Have.
One person did it that way.
Yes.
There will
it's
be
been
a,
done.
There will be a community network meeting this Saturday.
Good segue.
It's the quarterly meeting that happens, be happening August 9th, 1 to 4 p.m. at the Houston GOBT Community Center, which is at 3400 Montrose Boulevard, Suite 207. It's open to everybody. It's free. This is part of the Futures Conference. It's a continuing meeting that happens once a quarter and basically just talking about what's going on in the community. The new OutSmart is out, and on the cover they have a story about Jason and DeMarco, which is the gay singing group singing Christian music. And there was a documentary, I think it's still running on Showtime, that was rather interesting. In fact, the documentary, actually some of it takes place here in Houston. And they were the headliner a year ago, I think it was, or was it 2 years ago at the Pride Festival. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of good stuff, including Pride pictures.
I'm in it.
Pride pictures.
I didn't get in any of them.
We won an award.
Oh.
There's also a, they're starting their gayest and grayest community polls for the favorites. So be sure to log on to their website.
And vote for your favorite.
Yes. And then there's various party locations. I won't go into that. That's in this inside cover of OutSmart, where you can go and be social and vote. And
yeah. And again, this Wednesday is the Houston GLBT Political Caucus General Meeting. It begins its reception at 6:30 and the meeting itself at 7. And it is their endorsement meeting. So if you want to see some excitement, see politics at its best at the grassroots level, come and join us. It's at 1827 West Alabama, right there at the Haven Center, which is right next to the Chocolate Bar.
It's always the place to go. It's like, oh, Chocolate Bar, right there.
Well, you know, the thing, I used to tell, well, it's part of St. Stephen's Church. You know, people go, okay, but you tell them where the Chocolate Bar is, they know where it is.
That's a landmark.
And please, come.
David Elliott was pointing out that the vote is going to be in 90 days.
92 days.
Yes. When and where are the Republican conventions and the Democratic convention?
Democratic convention, I believe, is on the August 26th, somewhere in there, and the Republican is right after the Labor Day.
Okay, and where are they? Do you know?
The Denver. Democratic convention is in Denver. Republican is in Minneapolis.
Minneapolis.
Or St. Paul. Yes. That's happening. Don't forget, on Thursday, Central Library, starting at 7 p.m., downtown, talking about gay archives, gay history.
Thank you, Brian, for coming on tonight to talk about that.
It was interesting that he was saying that there are several different sort of collections around, and that you can actually go and meet different people who are operating different pieces of collections and so on.
And again, thanking David Elliott for calling in and telling us about what's going on in Washington, D.C.
And, of course, thanks to Fred Walters at the wonderful Houston Buyers Club talking about his store and all of the wonderful programs he does for the community.
And thank you.
And they have what coming up this weekend?
They have a program on weight loss for women. That's this Saturday.
And it'll be at Baring Methodist Church.
Yes. Okay. And next week, do we know yet anything?
We're going to hopefully have a segment talking about the International AIDS Conference and possibly an update on Pride.
There you go. You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
This August, KPFT is hosting its summer fundraising campaign, but this drive will not be like any other drive you've heard. I'm Dwayne Bradley, KPFT General Manager, here to tell you that during the various days of the summer sizzle, KPFT will reduce the amount of time we're asking for your support. Does it sound like the manager's gone crazy? Not yet. This is an experiment. We depend on your financial support to keep KPFT strong, and we know we can serve you better if we don't interrupt our entire schedule with constant fundraising pleas. You come to KPFT for great music, news, and views. That's what we want to provide. Help us build up a reserve now with your online pledge at kpft.org. You can also call the station at 713-526-4000, extension 314, to make that pledge early. KPFT Houston is doing this coming pledge drive a little bit differently, and your support today helps us get back to the programs you love. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
Have you ever felt that life is more and more like a jungle, but it has the appearance of a park? Listen to Open Journal at noon to 1 p.m. on August 7th to hear a discussion with Amma, the hugging Indian healer, and how our choice of what we do every day can be impacted by just one special human being, Amma. Although she makes no claims of being an avatar, the purported incarnation of Vishnu, who has come to this realm to not promote religion, but who says, "My religion is love." After you bathe in this experience, you will undoubtedly believe that life is a cakewalk or a spiritual park filled with light. Listen and stroll together in their lives' experiences with us visiting Amma and one of her longtime followers, Swami Ramakrishnananda. Also, commentary by Folly Engineer of Houston, meditation teacher of 35 years. Listen to Vibes, Mind, Body.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.